New York Mayor de Blasio speaking about perhaps the first crisis of his administration last night.
Testing confirmed that a patient here in New York City had tested positive for Ebola. The patient is now here in Bellevue Hospital.
At that news conference, the mayor explained that the patient, Craig Spencer, is a doctor, member of Doctors Without Borders. He'd been treating Ebola patients in Guinea and returned to New York a week ago, reported feeling sluggish on Tuesday. On Thursday, he came down with a fever, 100.3 degree fever, and was taken by EMTs wearing full Ebola gear to Bellevue Hospital. Authorities are retracing Dr. Spencer's steps in New York, including a ride on a subway, a trip to a Brooklyn bowling alley. His fiancée and two other people who had direct contact with him have been put in isolation. Here's Councilman Mark Levine, who represents the area where Dr. Craig Spencer lives.
In one case, I had a gentleman who I was speaking to who lives across the street who wouldn't shake my hand because he was fearful that because I was somehow connected to the case, I might be contagious. So we have to make sure that kind of irrational fear doesn't spread.
The mayor, city councilmen are trying to keep that fear and panic at a minimum, and there's some signs that they may be effective. Resident Maya Kim lives in the same building as Dr. Craig Spencer. She says she's not worried.
I'm in healthcare, so I understand the ways that it's transmitted, so I'm not, like, freaking out, but it's just crazy that it's in my building. I thought that I would have a risk working in healthcare, but yeah, I mean, it could happen to anyone.
Certainly can, and nobody knows that better than our next guest. Joining me now, Dr. Emmanuel Darcourt, Senior Health Director at the International Rescue Committee. He joins us in the studio. Dr. Harcourt, give us your sense of the balance between alarm versus reason right now in New York.
Well, John, it's exactly what we thought would happen. We knew that as the epidemic grew and correspondingly people came to respond to the call and worked on this epidemic, that we would get occasional cases that would come to the U.S. They're what we would call sporadic cases. So people who get infected in on the front lines, as doctors and nurses are in this case, and would become sick once they came back to the U.S. So there's nothing surprising about that. We're very worried about Dr. Spencer, but in terms of an outbreak in the United States, we are not worried at all. This was properly handled. It's we're doing exactly what we, my organization, the International Rescue Committee, does in the field in West Africa, which is patiently look after the contacts. But unfortunately, what we also expected is that this would make people upset. And that's understandable. It's what happened in West Africa. It's a very upsetting disease.
But in West Africa, of course, the infection rates were much, much higher. And the extent to which the villages were disrupted, cities were disrupted, that's not anything like what we're seeing here in New York.
There's absolutely no comparison. What's happening in West Africa is a massive outbreak. What's happening in New York is a single case of somebody for very understandable reasons who got infected and is extremely, extremely unlikely to transmit the virus to anyone else.
Let's talk for just a second about the behavior of this individual. We had on our program for a period of weeks Dr. Adam Levine, an ER doctor from Rhode Island, who decided to be a documentarian for us. He did diaries from the field in Bong County in Liberia, a remote area. So he was very much involved with patients. He had contact with patients. When he got back, he told us he was sticking close to home for 21 days and that even some of his friends didn't want anything to do with him until he was cleared of those 21 days. It is a little bit curious to me why Dr. Spencer would have been going to a bowling alley and spending time in the subway. I know he wasn't feeling any symptoms at that time, but is there something a little questionable about that behavior?
I'm not sure, John, and we really would need to know more exactly about what he was doing. I think the scientific fact is that the chances that he would infect anyone in the course of those activities is close to zero. I know Adam, and he's a great doctor, and I know he's also very much on the careful side. So I think that it's understandable, and we have some people who what we would call self-quarantine. But I think that what Dr. Spencer did not put anyone in danger.
And let's just take the other view that maybe he's an incredibly reckless individual, and of course he's not, and we're very much praying for his health, and we certainly admire his trip to West Africa to help with the epidemic. But he presented apparently with a fever of 100.3. At that level of symptoms, because of the way Ebola operates, you're not really an infection danger. You have to be so full of virus to be an infection risk. And at that point, you're so sick, you probably can barely even get yourself to the emergency room. Is that about right?
Well, it's partly true, but mostly is not an infectious risk, not because the illness is just starting, though that does make him less infectious. It doesn't make him non-infectious. But he's mostly not an infectious risk because we don't see people getting infected just from walking the streets or being in the subway or even sharing a bowling ball with someone. If people got infected that way, I can tell you that all of Monrovia would be infected right now because there's a lot more contact and there's a lot of people with Ebola who are walking about. The people who get infected are primarily healthcare workers and the relatives and friends of people who are sick with Ebola and who take direct care with them. Ebola is not that easy to transmit. You really have to be in fairly sustained contact with someone to get it. That's the pattern that we're seeing.
And so Dr. Spencer's fiancée would be someone we'd be worried about at this point.
Well, it very much depends on what kind of contact she had with him. She's obviously being monitored. But given the fact that he declared himself, as he should have, very early in his illness, I would say the level of worry would be relatively low.
And in terms of response here, what is it that's happening in New York that is different from what happened in Dallas? There certainly have been calls for New York to set an example here. I mean, I don't want to compare Dallas to New York. I mean, these are difficult situations for any city. But what can New York do to maybe set straight the protocols here and reassure people that there are mechanisms in place for taking care of this?
Well, fortunately for New York and unfortunately for Dallas, New York is already learning and has learned the lessons from Dallas. So people are much more aware. A number of things are happening. Well, first of all, the patient is taken to a place that is extremely prepared. My wife works at Bellevue as a physician, and so I know that she and just about every physician in the hospital has been fairly extensively briefed on Ebola, even the people who aren't expected to directly take care of Ebola patients. So the hospital is prepared. The public health authorities are extremely prepared. As we get ready to start our own treatment center, we've been collaborating with the Department of Health in the city of New York, and I know they're extremely familiar with Ebola and ready to act. So I think what's happening in New York is a lot of preparation that is paying off, and also a lot of messages from, obviously, we heard Governor Cuomo and Mayor de Blasio calming the situation and giving out facts. And in this case, facts are the best antidote to panic.
And we should recall the proud history of Bellevue Hospital. It's been on the front lines of healthcare problems in New York going back more than a century, whether we're talking about smallpox or the aftermath of 9/11 or the aftermath of Hurricane Sandy. Bellevue is the hospital that can absolutely handle anything. If any hospital can, it's Bellevue.
Absolutely. It's in their DNA. This is not their first outbreak by far. And I could tell you from as the husband of someone who works there that it's very much in the tradition of Bellevue and the mindset to be tougher than anything that's thrown at it.
Dr. Emmanuel Darcourt is Senior Health Director at the International Rescue Committee. He leads a team of public health professionals who provide technical assistance to the health and primary health care programs in Africa, Asia, the Middle East, and Asia. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.